Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Enduring classic by The Clash, Rock the Casbah, which my first guest this hour has chosen as the title of her new book, documenting what we've been calling the Arab Spring. She calls it Counter Jihad, where democracy, free speech, and individual rights are on the rise, Al-Qaeda is on the outs, and the West still can't get it right. Robin Wright has been covering the Middle East and the Muslim world for 40 years. She's the author of a number of books and a regular on television news and talk shows from Meet the Press and Face the Nation to Colbert and Bill Maher. Robin Wright, always good to have you on this show. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's always nice to be with you, Brian. Thank you.
And probably every show you're going on is introducing you with The Clash.
No, you are the very first. I've been waiting for it for weeks, but I'm delighted you used it.
Well, at least some people somewhere know music. Anyway, define this term that you use, counter jihad.
The counter jihad is two things. It is both a rejection of the kind of autocratic geriatric leaders who've been in place now for decades in countries like Egypt and Tunisia and Syria and Yemen and Libya, but it's also a rejection of extremism. And we tend to lose sight of this epic change in the region that's as important for our interests a decade after 9/11 as the demand for freedom of speech and political rights is and playing out on the streets of many of these capitals.
Was there something about the song that inspired the title, or why, of all the things in the Arab or Muslim worlds, the Casbah as symbol?
The Casbah in North Africa is the center of town. It's the old quarter. It's where governments often are located, where you have the business sector. It's really the heart and soul of some of these capitals. And the whole idea of the countries being rocked by uprisings, which took so many by surprise, this wave of protests against really entrenched leaders, and the fact that in places like Syria today you see again tens of thousands turning out in cities across the country despite the fact the death toll is rising, despite the use of military force by the regime. It's been quite astounding. But I picked the title also because there are a couple of different things happening. There's the political change we're witnessing, but there's also a culture of change. And half the book is about the new Muslim rappers, the new Muslim comedians who are making jokes about extremists, the new Muslim playwrights who have jihad in the title, but it's a totally different kind of jihad they're writing about. One of my favorite plays is called Till Jihad Do Us Part, and it's a romantic comedy. So there's a lot of other things happening in the region that are important in creating a different environment and that is conducive to political change as well.
What does counter jihad comedy sound like?
There are some very funny jokes, and I'm happy to read one of them if you'll let me.
It's absolutely kind of
it's a kind of naughty joke told by an Iranian comedian, Iranian-born comedian named Maz Jobrani.
I have my hand on the bleep button just in case.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. It's about the hijacking of the plane between Amsterdam and Detroit. And he gets up on stage and he says, you know, one guy can really mess it up for the rest of us. Look at the Christmas Day bomber, the guy who tried to blow up the Northwest flight, this Abu Mustafa Bubu or whatever his name is. I say this guy was crazy. Come on, any man would back me up. After all, where was the bomb? He looks out incredulously at the audience. Yeah, right, in his underwear. I mean, really, any normal man would surely question that instruction. He then switches to a Middle East accent and assumes the role of a normal hijacker in a final discussion with his terror masters. Excuse me, I have one last question for you. You say my reward in heaven will be 72 virgins. So do you think maybe we could put the bomb someplace else? I mean, I really think I'm going to need my penis. Now, that's not the kind of humor one might associate, but it's so fundamental in the challenging of extremist ideologies that people are making fun, are ridiculing the tactics of Al-Qaeda.
Yeah. Where did you say that routine was delivered?
Oh, he performs both in the Middle East and in the United States. He's Iranian-born. He lives now in Los Angeles. But he takes workshops. He and other comedians have taken workshops back to the region. And, for example, in Egypt, there's now a young comedian named Bassem Youssef, who is the Jon Stewart of Egypt. He has a program with a mock anchor and mock reporters who make jokes about the news. There's another comedian who calls himself the Jerry Seinfeld of Saudi Arabia and who tells jokes about the inanities of Saudi life. So it's comedy is a way of introducing skepticism and cynicism and questioning whether it's of the status quo or the ideologies that have failed to deliver tangible benefits to the people.
So, and what was his name again?
Maz Jobrani is the Iranian. Bassem Youssef is the the Jerry Seinfeld.
No, the one who told that joke that you
Maz
read.
Oh, Maz Jobrani.
Yeah, I just thought people would want to hear it again because you said it early on. But since they heard his content and we all heard it, I thought we should get that name out again. And you know, so maybe one of the markers of freedom in the Middle East going forward will be countries where he can perform routines like that and countries where he can't.
I think that's a good point. And the interesting thing is they're now, he and other American Muslim comedians are giving workshops in Cairo and Jordan and producing a whole new generation of Muslim stand-ups in the region. And this is really an important turning point.
Robin Wright, my guest on WNYC, author of Rock the Casbah, Rage and Rebellion Across the Islamic World. We can take phone calls from Muslims and others, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you're an immigrant or a visitor from a predominantly Muslim country, do you see cultural change along the lines that Robin was just describing, the Jerry Seinfeld of wherever, the Jon Stewart of wherever, stand-up comics with routines like the one she quoted? Are these important indicators of something, in your opinion? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But away from the comedy for a minute, to the vastness of the change of this counter-jihad, as you call it. We know about Egypt and Tunisia, and we know about Libya and Syria differently. But you write about even Pakistani villagers offering resistance to the Taliban. And yet all we seem to hear in this country is about Pakistanis playing footsie with the Taliban.
Well, there are lots of reports of Pakistani intelligence having dealings with the Taliban and other extremist groups. And that's a major concern. The Al-Qaeda franchise is not going to disappear overnight, even in the aftermath of Osama bin Laden's death. The Pakistan is, in some ways, because it is a nuclear power, one of the most dangerous countries in the world. But the fact is, when the Swat Valley was overtaken by the Taliban, people responded to the imposition of rigid Islamic law and Islamic justice, particularly against women. And they rose up and helped the Pakistani military come back in and retake control of a region that's often known as the Switzerland of Pakistan. It's a resort area. It's only 90 miles from Islamabad, the capital. And so it is important strategically as well. And that's a turning point. This is, again, what we saw in Iraq with the awakening in 2007. The United States likes to take credit for the turn of events in Iraq, but it was really when the Iraqi people rose up against Al-Qaeda themselves and began forming groups, armed groups, to fight Al-Qaeda of Mesopotamia that the Iraqis and the United States were able to restore calm in most of the country.
Carol in Essex Fells, you're on WNYC. Carol, thanks so much for calling.
Hi. I just want to say that I am a Lebanese Christian, American-born, and, you know, I think that Lebanon is a country that's really ill-perceived in the United States. You know, it's perceived as a terrorist nation. And if you watch TV, Lebanese TV, we have satellite TV, we watch it every evening, and there is political satire rampant. And it is a country where freedom of the press is the same in Lebanon as it is here in the United States. The newspapers and the TV stations are free to say, to criticize the government, and free to say whatever they want. And I don't think America knows that because they don't, you know, they only talk about one nation in the Middle East as being a democracy and having political freedom, and that's Israel, and that's not the only nation. And even under the occupation of the Syrians for 30 years, Lebanon was always a place of freedom.
Robin Wright, do you want to talk about Lebanon with Carol?
Sure. I lived in Beirut for 5 years during some of the worst years of the Civil War in the 1980s. And Lebanon is an interesting example. There are 17 recognized religious sects, and they all have a quota in government. And this has been a place where there have been real sectarian tensions, but also real sectarian attempts to coexist. And it's important when she talks about the freedom of the press and the fact that there's political satire. Rap is another idiom of opposition. It's become the rhythm of the resistance in so many of these countries. And many of these groups perform in Lebanon. Many of them come from Lebanon. There are American Idol equivalents that are hosted in Lebanon as well as in the Persian Gulf. And would you believe, in Afghanistan, there's a program called Star Academy in which women have also performed alongside men.
Huh. Would you call Lebanon a democracy, though? Or even though there are some elections there, is it a country where Syria has its thumb on the scales of everything?
Syria has always been reluctant to allow Lebanon to be an independent nation that makes all of its decisions. It feels that Lebanon was a part of Syria and that its rib was ripped away from it when it became independent after World War II. So Syria has been a dominant influence, but they do have free and fair elections in Lebanon. And if there was any country before the uprisings that could claim some degree of democracy in the Arab world, it was Lebanon.
Carol, thank you so much for calling us. And Bandar in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bandar.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. And I wanted to thank Mrs. Wright for her comments about the current revolutions that are ongoing in the Middle East and how they have less to do with an ideology or a religion than they have to do with social movements and a desire for freedom and democracy. I wanted to make a comment, though, that comedy has long existed in the Arab world, and that I think it's really only the market in the West that is starting to open up for it. Shortly after 9/11, there was a film made called Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, and I think that title says a lot about what some Americans may have perceived of our comedic nature. But things have improved, and you only recently, I think, has stand-up and sort of satirical news programs, there's one in Lebanon as well, come out as important new venues for that, for comedy there.
Robin?
Well, look, stand-up is a new phenomenon in the Arab world. It is true that Arabs have a sense of humor and always have, and that goes back a long time. There are even claims that the Prophet Muhammad was a great punster. I'm old, but I don't go back that far. So he makes a valid point, but stand-up is new, as particularly in the use of politics. It was a subject that so many of the comedians in the region stayed away from. They might make their in-law jokes, but they didn't take on politics. But today they are.
Thank you for your call, Bandar. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Robin Wright, the longtime journalist in the Middle East in particular, with a new book called Rock the Casbah. And yet, despite this counter-jihad, as you call it, and the push for democracy and individual rights. You say this will not be easy for the West and will be confusing for the West because we may see democracy and individual rights as what our political culture is all about too, but they'll embrace those things in different ways in different predominantly Muslim countries. What are you thinking of?
I think in the next decade we're likely to see a kind of dual phenomena, and that is the push for greater political rights, freer elections, free speech, right to assemble, protection for minorities, growth of women's rights. But at the same time, there will be a push for these things to happen in an Islamic context. And that will often confuse us and concern us because I think a decade after the terrorist attacks on 9/11, that Americans, many Americans, are more afraid of Islam today than they were then. And it's going to be harder for us to understand that they need change in a familiar, legitimate context. There are lots of different kinds of democracies in the world. European democracies are different than American democracy. And I think that there will be a different flavor of what emerges in the region. In Cairo today, there are tens of thousands of people who turned out at Tahrir Square again, and they're calling for both a new system that is Arab and also Islamic. And again, because of our own paranoia about whether Islam is out to attack the West, there will be concern about Islamic parties. But the interesting phenomena in the region is that many of the Muslim parties are beginning to splinter. The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, for example, is now finding a generational split. The young saying to the elder leadership, you weren't elected democratically, you don't represent all of us, and we disagree with some of your platforms, including your resistance to allowing both women and Coptic Christians to be presidents of Egypt. So they're beginning to break away, and that's an important phenomenon. The demographic baby boom in the region is going to define the next half century in the region. We're talking about two-thirds of 300 million people who are between the ages of 15 and 29, and they are tech-savvy. They are, for the first time, the majority of them literate. They have dreams of being more than just working in subsistence jobs, and they are aware of the change that's happened everywhere else in the world in the last quarter century, and they don't want to be left behind.
You put this Arab Spring or counter-jihad into a century of historical context. You call it one of four turning points in the Middle East in the last century. The fall of the Ottoman Empire around World War I that spawned new Arab states, Israel's creation in 1948 that set up battle lines, the Iranian Revolution in 79, and now this. In the big sweep of history, does it all make sense to you that this would be happening now?
It does to me, and I think it's been coming for a while. In some ways, the United States has not facilitated it because we have been allies to some of the autocrats who ruled for so many decades because our preference was for stability. And that's still true in the Persian Gulf. We're all enthusiastic about democracy up across North Africa, into the Levant, into Syria, but it comes to a screeching halt when it comes to the Persian Gulf, in part because of oil, in part because of our fear of Iran and the Gulf as a buffer zone, in part because these are countries that have enormous wealth, have invested in the United States, and we're afraid of what the alternatives might be. So I think that this is the beginning of the beginning. It's going to play out over the next generation at least. And when you kind of think about how long change takes, it's helpful to think about the Soviet Union. A generation later, you still have a former communist and KGB spy chief who's in power in Moscow. Change takes a long time to really work its way through writing new constitutions, having free elections over and over and over again, and getting new parties that establish themselves. That's tough stuff.
Robin Wright has been covering the Middle East and the Muslim world for 40 years for the LA Times, the Washington Post, other newspapers. She's the author of books and a regular on television news and talk shows from Meet the Press and Face the Nation to Colbert and Bill Maher. Robin Wright's new book is Rock the Casbah. Thank you so much. That was fascinating.
Thank you, Brian.
And still to come this hour, Rebecca Traister next on the so-called slut walk movement. Is it good or bad for women? And then fashion as high culture. We'll look for the artistic point at the super popular Alexander McQueen exhibit at the Met.